please step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 556. I am Lisa Sheps, and once again, I am flying solo today. We are wishing Nicole Shiro well as she is sitting at home, blanketed by a heat blanket and trying to feel better. Feel better, Nicole. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this live as we do every other Wednesday at KOOP.org. Stick with us.
Show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
What are you doing? Suddenly you realize the count.
It is Wednesday, February something, 20 something. On the show today, that's 2020. I did not change the date on my script. It's February 19th, 2020. On the show today, we have New Archive Theater and their show, The Man of Destiny. We're going to be talking to the folk from Outsider Fest. And later on, we'll be talking to someone from Broadway Across America's Come From Away. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, and Trinidad, Colorado. Stay with us. Oh my gosh, I had technical failure. I could not get the music to stop. Okay, all right. Believe it or not, there are other people in the studio with me.
Just observing.
As I mentioned, Nicole is out, so I'm just going to introduce the folks that are with me right now, so that we all know who we are. We have Maggie Thompson. Hi, Maggie.
How's it going?
Groovy. We have Michael Rodriguez.
Hi.
Jennifer Rose Davis.
Hello.
Welcome back. And the incomparable Mr. PJ Ravel.
Hi.
How are you? PJ, say something to me.
Hi.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. It's just that I need to turn up the volume in my headsets. So another wonderful international folk bazaar from Kim Simpson. I'd like to thank him for doing that. And again, Nicole is a little under the weather once again today. And so we're hoping that she feels better. There's nothing worse than just having the crud and not being able to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, great.
And it's kind of gray today. Gray, gray, gray. So, did anybody recognize that piece of music that we played coming in?
I don't know where it's from, but I know that's Santino Fontana singing.
Wow! Did you get that just from his voice?
Yes, mostly because other than the fact that I was subject to maybe one too many showings of Frozen in college when it came out.
was he in Frozen?
He was. The villain in Frozen.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I knew him from, there was a web series called Submissions Only about the business of show. And if you are a show business person, we talked about it on the show along. It's been off for a while, but you could probably still find it on YouTube. But Submissions Only was a wonderful, and had a lot of Broadway actors. Kenan Bolger was in it. Lots of great people.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Santino Fontana. He was the love interest, but that was from Tootsie.
Oh yeah.
Who is Santino Fontana. I can't pronounce his name.
Santino Fontana.
Yeah, it's a hard name to pronounce. but I am, we're going to start right off talking about, it's really more of a local thing, but they just announced the Broadway Across America season.
I know, I'm so excited.
And this is the most amazing season. Austin is finally, we usually are, I would call us a second, or we were a second tier city. Mm-hmm. We are getting the shows that have already gone around. So many of the shows that would come to us were already done. They were not, these were non-equity tours. There were the quality was questionable at times, and at times not. But listen to this season, Summer, the Donna Summer musical, and I believe that's just was last season. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Tootsie, just mm-hmm. played a little bit from Tootsie. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
Wow.
Come on, you guys. Mean Girls.
Yes.
And Best Musical Award winner, Hadestown.
That's incredible. Oh, wow. That's
amazing.
Oh, wow. It's a fantastic
season. And of course, they also, as the bonus, as the, you know, when you have Lotto, you also have the bonus number. Well, the bonus, don't you?
I mean,
is there a bonus number?
It's been a while since I played.
I don't play lottery. although I think if I did, I should win. Wicked is the seventh. They call it the season option.
Oh, cool.
Excellent.
So what of those excites anybody? Anything in particular?
Oh, well, I really would love to see Hadestown because I've read about the costuming and the stuff that they've been doing.
That's right. And that's your background,
so
isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Mean Girls is actually really great. I listened to the soundtrack because I was a little afraid with all the movies that are constantly being adapted into shows and the quality. And the last one that I really loved was Legally Blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a Mean Girls person, so I was like, okay, they better do a good job. It tells the story excellently just through the soundtrack alone. So,
well, I know people have seen it. Nicole Shiro saw it,
yes.
And all the reviews are very, very positive.
That's fantastic.
And looking forward to it. I won't bore us with this audience, but I do have a Mean Girl story. You know, email me. I'll tell you all about it. only because I never seen the movie. And I was in a group on a bicycle, a AIDS ride, and we decided to call our group at the last minute. Somebody said our team name is the Mean Girls, and I went, "What a great name!" And we were all named Heather. I also didn't know anything about the Heathers.
That's also a musical adaptation.
Yeah.
Really?
So anyway, so we were the Mean Girls, and we were all named Heather. And everybody wanted to be on our team, but we said you could come in, but you have to start as a Becky. So while we're talking about Broadway Across America, last night, and we're going to have an interview with one of the actors in later, but last night I went to see Come From Away, which is currently playing at the Bass Concert Hall. And it is probably one of the better things I've seen in Austin.
That's great.
Listeners to this show know how hypercritical I am, and I don't like most everything I see. But this is just a wonderful piece. And here's an interesting thing. So those of you that have gone to see Broadway musicals, so after the curtain call, lights come up, the orchestra is still playing for usually another couple of minutes as people are filing out. After the curtain call, after the cast left, after two ovations, they left, the band was playing, 95% of the audience stayed.
Whoa.
Standing and clapping with the band on stage to the very end, and got another ovation just for the band.
Wow. That's great.
Never seen that before.
How cool.
And I have seen three shows in my life.
Yeah.
But that was pretty incredible. So Come From Away, this reporter says go see it.
I'm jealous.
And it is a, you can go see it.
I know.
It's a true ensemble piece, which is amazing. You don't see that very often. And not one character, well, one of the characters kind of stands out. But it's a beautiful piece, and I cried, and I laughed. It was better than Cats. but speaking of curtain calls, I'm just going to go right to this. I know if Nicole were here, she is not a big fan of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Mm-hmm.
I, on the other hand, am. Is anybody else a fan or go the other direction with Joseph?
I mean, I'm an Andrew Lloyd Webber fan.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know.
No, it's okay.
It's the musicality. I'm not saying the quality of stories, because 4-year-old Maggie really did enjoy Cats. That was the first show I ever saw.
Okay, I'm sorry.
it's all good. Everyone makes fun of it endlessly. But I don't know. There are parts of it that I love and parts of it that I don't. If anything, I'd continuously will only associate it with Donny Osmond.
Oh, well, you know, the Donny Osmond tour was supposed to be real. I did not see him. There were two tours going out at the same time. Donny Osmond was in one, and I can't remember his name, but he was a soap opera star. This was in the mid-80s. And that's the one I saw several. I had a very dear friend in it, and I saw several of it. But Donny Osmond was supposed to be wonderful in it. So Joseph was one of the shows that I was really connected with when it opened in New York. And are you familiar with the Megamix at the end of... So the Megamix is after the show is over, the finale goes on for another, the curtain call goes on for another 15 minutes. And basically what they did was they reprised every single number in the show. Nice. But the actors come out and they do it not as their character, but as an actor. And the Megamix was, and it had a strong backbeat. It was a more dancey kind of mix. And now a lot of shows do this. Mamma Mia does it. Others do it. But I believe Joseph was the first. And the reason why they did it, when it moved from off-Broadway to Broadway, it was too short. So they added this Megamix. But the reason why I bring this up is at Lincoln Center, they had a staged reading of it. And listen to this cast. As soon as I find it, Noah Galvin, Eden Espinosa, Jesse Vosk, Andy Carl and Orfe, Chuck Cooper, Merle Dandridge, Brooks Ashmakis, another name, hard name to say, J. Armstrong Johnson, Bonnie Milligan, Mikhail Kilgore, Robert Azaria, Roderick Covington, Jason Gauthier, Tiffany Mann. I mean, it goes on. It's an amazing, amazing cast. And it was directed by Michael Arden, who directed Once on This Island and Spring Awakening. Scenic designer, Beowulf Borat. There is a link on our site to a 3-minute piece of the Megamix, which looks really gorgeous. They look like they're just having so much fun. And I love it. So, Joseph, that happened, was February 17th, so it's over. They do this every year. Next year, and again, I keep mentioning Nicole. I'm sorry she's not here, because she loves, loves, loves this show that they're doing next year. So we're going from the wackiness and the lightheartedness of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat to, what's his name? Frank Wildhorn's The Civil War.
Oof.
Nicole loves it. I was going to play some music from the Civil War. They had this concept album where they had all these different stars doing it, and it's not available on iTunes anymore, and I don't know why. Anyway, so that's the one that they're doing next year. That's what I say about that. Let's see what else we want to talk about.
That's a Pelosi move. The Nancy Pelosi move there.
It is. I learned it from Nancy Pelosi. There is a wonderful... who likes August Wilson? Anybody?
Yes.
Yeah, who doesn't? So there is the Austin Wilson... August Wilson African American Cultural Center in Pittsburgh, and they are opening up a new permanent exhibit called August Wilson, A Writer's Landscape. And it's all about his life with his personal letters and things like that. And it is broken into 3 parts. I love this. The first one, and I don't know, they don't get into detail, but they said the first part is inspired by Eddie's, a restaurant in Pittsburgh that Wilson went to as a young man. They don't say anything more than that. So use your imagination. I'm guessing there'll be some cups of coffee. I was kidding. The second is a replica of the playwright's home office and showcasing his manuscripts and books. And the final component is dedicated to each of the 10 plays that are part of the American Century Cycle, of which Fences is one.
Yes.
And others. So I just thought it was very, very interesting. I believe it was his wife said, I posed the idea of having a little corner. This is in the museum itself. I posed the idea of having a little corner where I could recreate August's desk with a pile of books, printouts, and pencils. She wanted to show that he really did sit down and write these things and that it wasn't an easy process, that these plays didn't come out of nowhere. And it was that idea was the germ that created this whole permanent exhibit. So that's fantastic. That's great. I guess we really only have time for a couple more. I do want to say that Equity is celebrating the year of the stage manager. And they did it. Well, I found this sort of an interesting thing. They're celebrating it by allowing people to post on social media stories about stage managers. I thought that was kind of a lazy way to do it.
Allowing them.
But as someone who came, I came from stage management. Okay, and the last thing that I'm going to talk about before we take a little break, because we have a lot of stuff to go. Do folks like... Oh, I'm going to talk about two more things. I'm sorry, I want to talk about this. John Malkovich is coming to town.
Ooh. Yes. Oh, that's cool.
Yes. It's a show called The Music Critic. And I believe it's a one-person show, and it's a small tour, really. It's a limited U.S. tour. It starts off at the Kennedy Center, and then it comes here. See? Again, wow. We're first-tier town.
We are.
Then it goes to Berkeley and Houston. Seems like a weird way to go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there you go. It's called The Music Critic. Malkovich plays an evil critic who believes the music of Beethoven, Chopin, and Prokofiev to be weary and dreary.
Sounds riveting.
Seems right up his alley.
I can only imagine.
I know. I'm trying to remember. I saw a one-man show that Malkovich did that was... I wonder if it's this one. It was... I don't remember what it was. And so that's where I'm going to leave it. The last thing I want to talk about is this show that is a critic's pick in the New York Times. It was reviewed by Laura Collins Hughes. It's called TJ Loves Sally Forever, and the four is the number four. And it's interesting. There's spoilers. So the critic says things that... lead me to wonder what happens. Basically, they say at the end of the show, there is no curtain call. The actors just leave, and the audience is just sitting there left to do something that they don't mention. But she said it was uncomfortable to the point, but it was good discomfort. And it is dealing with race, and it is about basically TJ loves Sally forever. TJ is Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. But not the Thomas Jefferson you're thinking of. It's the person in her school, Thomas Jefferson. And Sally is really Sally Hemings. And so it's a little bit of this around race relations. So here in the review, she says, Laura Collins Hughes says, set on a college campus in the contemporary American South, where a whitewashed sense of tradition drips with nostalgia for the antebellum past, TJ Loves Sally Forever is not a romance by any stretch. Despite the title, it isn't TJ's story either, though he does tend to think everything is about him. So TJ, I believe, is a professor and Sally is a student. So very, very interesting. And it's playing at the Jack in Brooklyn, which I have never heard of. Anybody?
No.
Okay. Well, but go check this review out. You can find it on our website at offstageonair.com when I post the show. So we are in our interstitial music. We're listening to music of the season that's coming up. So let's hear a little bit of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. This, I believe, will be a song that people will recognize. And this is my good friend Christian Borle singing.
The Candyman makes everything.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa Sheps, and a cadre of other people. We've been having a lovely conversation with our group of people here, and I'm going to reintroduce some of them because we're going to talk about their show. These are the people from Archive Theater and the show Man of Destiny by newcomer playwright George Bernard Shaw.
up and coming.
I think he's gonna go somewhere if he just supplies himself.
Oh,
and we have the artistic director of the theater, the founder of the theater, and the director of this piece.
So this piece is actually directed mostly by my partner, my business partner, Garrison Mart, okay. And I'm kind of like the assistant director, basically.
Awesome. Well, all of that is to say, welcome back, Jennifer Rose Davis.
Thank you so much.
And we have playing Napoleon, Michael Rodriguez.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And the mysterious lady is played by Maggie Thompson.
Thank you.
Maggie, say something in your microphone for me.
Hello.
No, you know what? That's the problem. Your microphone is not on.
Well, that's not good.
So I'm going to need you to share because that microphone is not working. That is why everybody was so quiet. You were so quiet before.
Oh, there we go.
There you
better?
Are. Yes, excellent. There you are. Okay. That's interesting. I'll have to put in a technical thing for that. All right. So, Jennifer, tell us a little bit about this show.
Well, so this is a really fun, funny, surprisingly seductive little show. It's not one of Shaw's more common works, so you don't see it very often. It's only about an hour long. And imagine if you were back right around the time of the French Revolution, right before Napoleon's about to take power, and you went to an Italian tavern for the night, and Napoleon was there about 2 days after his first big victory at the Battle of Lodi.
Yes.
And
don't I know
you
it.
Basically walked into this tavern, got a seat, got some got some wonderful food, played some games, and then got to see Napoleon in this incredible interaction with this mysterious lady who has stolen his dispatches as they go back and forth in this epic battle of wits to try to get them back. And that's our show.
Excellent. Is this a two-person play?
Well, no, it's actually... it's written as a four-actor play. Uh-huh. We've actually integrated two extra actors to be the comic servants in the inn for a little extra
fun. The CSs, we call
those,
that's
in
right.
the
business. Well, awesome. And you are doing this out at Pioneer Farms in the Round.
Yes, it's a fantastic space. It was actually... It's an old dance hall that was built in 1900, only 3 years after the play was written by mm-hmm. George Bernard Shaw in... 1897, and the space is just gorgeous.
Are you actually in a theater?
No, it's just a huge wooden dance hall, uh-huh. basically. So we've put up tables and chairs all around it, and then built our little set right in the center. And so you're right there in the action. You know, things happen right beside you. It's a very interactive show, uh-huh. so you get caught up in the action.
How many people fit in there? How big is the house?
We can fit about 100 to 125.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty big.
Yeah. It's a pretty big hall.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And it's, so is the show interactive? Are you actually working with the audience?
There are parts of the show that are interactive. Not all of it is. You know, once Napoleon and the mysterious lady get going, they're kind of in their own world. But the comic servants are definitely interactive. And then, you know, other fun things happen during the show that involve the audience as well. Because that's kind of how we do it at the Archive Theater.
Right. Well, your mission is to take classics and bring them back to life.
That's
give
right.
them sort of a modern twist.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
Well, and, you know, give you a feel of what it would be like to live in that time.
Yeah. And this is Archive Theater's second outing.
Yeah. So last fall, we produced our Cyrano de Bergerac, which was my personal dream project that I'd spent almost 8 years translating. And I directed it and everything.
And it got great notices.
It did. It got good reviews. And we had a great audience. And we really enjoyed it. And we kind of did the same thing with that one, where we turned Scottish Rite into a 17th century theater. So mm-hmm. you came in and you were a theater
kind of looks like that already.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It wasn't very hard. But it was the same kind of interactivity happening during the thing.
Great. So Michael Rodriguez, you're playing Napoleon.
Yes.
Do you have a specific take on Napoleon, or would if I were to close my eyes and think about Napoleon, would that be the approach you're taking?
Probably. Yeah, I would say it is pretty much kind of how I would imagine Napoleon. He's a very mean guy, and there's no, you know, that's just kind of part of it. But at the same time, he's very intelligent, and the comedic side of it, I think, lessens the, I guess, the meanness of him. There's a uh-huh. certain amount you can just kind of have fun with that. But no, I mean, it is really much how you would see the character.
Do you put your hand in your waistcoat?
Yeah, there's a little bit of fan service to do that. Although it's a little more awkward than you would think. And then your like natural actor reaction, obviously, to use your hand. So I'm just like, okay, am I just doing everything with my left hand now? It's a little weird. So I try to work there it in, go. But honestly, I don't really do it very often.
I would think not. I don't know if he actually, I guess he posed for a picture that way. And that's why everybody does it. Maggie, tell us about the role of the mysterious lady.
So there's not much that I can truly give away.
Okay.
Hence the name Mysterious. mysterious lady. Mm-hmm. But we are not entirely sure in the beginning of the show whether or not she's an Austrian spy, but she employs at least 10 different strategies to make sure that Napoleon doesn't read the letters that he's not supposed to read, because one of them is a love letter that compromises a certain someone in his life. And that's about all I can say.
Okay, well, and y'all are prepared to do a little scene, correct?
Yes.
Can we, somebody, Jennifer, you want to set it up, or somebody want to set it up?
Yeah, I can work on that. So I've actually tricked him out of the letters, and then he somehow has made me angry enough to give him the letters. So I'm trying to employ yet another of the 10 strategies to make sure that he doesn't read that particular letter.
Okay, well, this is Maggie Thompson and Michael Rodriguez doing a scene from Archive Theater's production of Man of Destiny by George Bernard Shaw.
General, let us make a fair division. Take the information your spies have sent you about the Austrian army and leave me with the Paris correspondence. That will content me.
A fair division? It seems to me, madame, you've come to regard my papers as your own property, of which I am trying to rob you.
No, on my honor. I ask for no letter of yours. Not a word that has been written by you or to you. That packet contains a stolen letter, a letter written by a woman to a man not her husband, a letter that means disgrace, infamy.
A love letter.
What else but a love letter could stir up so much hate?
Why is it sent to me, to put the husband in my power, huh?
No, no, it can be of no use to you. I swear it will cost you nothing to give it to me. It has been sent to you out of sheer malice, solely to injure the woman who wrote it.
Then why not send it to her husband instead of me?
Oh, I don't know.
I thought so. A little romance to get the papers back? Per Bacco, little woman, I can't help admiring you. If I could lie like that, it would save me a great deal of trouble.
How I wish I had told you some lie. You would have believed me then. The truth is the one thing nobody will believe.
That is true. Do you believe that? What a great scene. I have to go. I get switch into a little tangent here. And Michael, I'm going to ask you to give me a number between 2 and 26.
A number between 2 and 26.
Yes.
24.
All right, let's see what that is.
Hi, I'm Holland Taylor, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin 91.7 FM.
That did not go out into the speakers in the studio, which is weird. That was Holland Taylor doing a legal ID. Good choice. We haven't heard from Holland Taylor in a while. So how fun is this show to do? It seems like it would be a lot of fun.
It's, I think, probably one of the most interesting that I've done for a while, because I haven't been able to step outside of someone who's completely opposite of myself. But I also really haven't had a good, like, tete-a-tete dialogue with someone before, so it's been a lot of fun to poke fun at you, Michael.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you a question about the mysterious woman. Just so within the text of the, without giving anything away, within the text that Shaw put in there, do you have a character that's all there, or as much of this stuff that you as an actor had to come up with?
I think some of it was there, but it's a matter of what we actually did is Garrison wanted to take out all of Shaw's very specific stage direction to see what we would produce on our own. And he's been working on this project for a number of years. He's wanted to do this for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then add in us, and with me, the way I approach any female role is that they are capable, they have autonomy, they're not weak.
They pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just how I live my life, and so I wanted to make sure the humor, sarcasm, and everything else could be shown through.
Awesome. Well, I congratulate you for that. When I direct, I also ignore the stage directions, much to the chagrin of many people. So this show has already opened. And how's it all going?
It's going really well. We have been excited by our first couple of weekends full of audiences. Our preview audience in particular was huge, which was lovely.
Great.
And then it actually snowed that night, which was, you know, it just made it really special. It's interesting because it's a lot of new people really to the scene.
Great.
You know, a lot of people are getting information from Pioneer Farms and getting excited about it. So,
well, awesome. So where can folks go to get more information about the show?
Well, you can go up to our website at www.thearchivetheater.org. Mm-hmm. and that's the easiest way. Or you can go to the Pioneer Farms website at pioneerfarms.org.
And how long does the show play?
We play for 2 more weekends, this weekend and the next weekend.
So you close on the 29th?
Yes, we do.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. And hopefully some or all of you can stick around and go backstage with me. That was Jennifer Rose Davis, Maggie Thompson, and Michael Rodriguez of Archive Theaters, The Man of Destiny by George Bernard Shaw. Play now through February 29th at Pioneer Farms. For more information, the Archive Theater, spelled with an ER.org, and we will be right back.
Napoleon's a pastry.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. We just had a lovely conversation with Jennifer Rose Davis, Maggie Thompson, and Michael Rodriguez. And now we're going to switch gears. And we're going to talk to PJ Raval of Outsider Fest. Hi, PJ.
Hi.
Welcome back to the show. We haven't had you on in a while. Maybe it was last year.
Yeah, I think it was last year.
Yeah. So Outsider Fest is in its...
Sixth year.
My gosh.
I know.
And it's just kicking behind, as we say.
We'd like to think so.
tell folks what is Outsider Fest.
Yeah, so Outsider Fest is a queer transmedia festival. And lately we've been embracing the term transmedia because, it's performance, but it's also music and artwork, visual art. A lot of it, contains filmmaking as well, sometimes projections. So this idea of new art forms and kind of new forms of kind of queer expression.
Well, that's cool. And it's this year, as has been in the past couple of years or several years since SVT went away, it's at the Vortex.
It is, yes, just down the street.
Yep. And the Vortex is such a wonderful campus to do things like this.
It is. They've been really supportive of, the festival and just in general the organization. And we kind of take over the whole entire place.
I would assume you would.
We do.
And you kick off with a party tonight.
We do, yes. Today is our opening night, which is really exciting. So we have, a reception. There's going to be a performance by Christine, who is Paul Swallow, his alter ego, maybe, so to speak. And then we also have a really amazing performer who's coming in named JB Guman Jr., who has a performance called The Art of Being, which I think this is a great example of kind of a transmedia experience. It's a film projection, but there's a performance also. And from my understanding, maybe a lot of dancing in it. So we'll find out.
Could be. Well, so what is exciting you about this year's Outsider Fest?
I think in general, in general, each year for me, what's been really exciting is it's kind of discovery. There's a lot of, for me, it's the kind of festival where I actually don't look too much in advance of what's going to be programmed and more just excited to show up and find out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Discover people. But in general, this festival, we also have an installation piece called The Fruit Machine, which is, if anyone's been at the Vortex.
That sounds like my living room.
Right? Well, just wait till you see it. So, the theme of this year's festival is, nasty fruits, bad apples, and beyond. So, at the Vortex, if anyone's been there, there's an area called the Pony Shed, which is off to the side. And there's an artist named Josh Tadeo who has transformed it into what's called the Fruit Machine. And I stopped by there the other day, and let's just say it's going to be a real experience to go into this space.
Interesting. Can you give us any kind of hint as to what that means?
Well,
you're kind of being mysterious, PJ.
There's a lot of fruit in there. Maybe above you, maybe some below you. We'll see.
Awesome.
I think maybe some kombucha too. Maybe in there.
Kombucha is just wrong. I have to say that about kombucha. I love all my kombucha drinking friends, but not me. Well, I will tell you, I looked on the site today, and I have here in front of me a list of performers.
Oh, great!
And I threw it into Word, and I put on the number thing, and there's 29 different performers.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's got to be even more than that. Kay Turner is doing a performance called Queer Croning, mm-hmm. which I think already has.
That was my sorority name in college. Yeah, I guess I should say 29 different performances.
Yes, correct.
So yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's amazing. I'm just going to go through some of these.
Sure.
Adrian and I cannot pronounce any
Anemone.
Of these people. Anemone, Carrie mm-hmm. Atwood. Christine, we also talked to that was Paul Swallow, Idris Cooper, Anna Fwashi. Did I do that good?
I think so.
Okay, awesome. I'm just Hot Bits.
Hot Bits.
Also, my sorority name in college. Mariachi Las Coronales.
Correct.
Awesome. Workout with Erica Nix. We love Erica. So where are all these people coming from? They're not all local.
All around the world. I mean, we have a performer coming from Brazil. We have several people coming from Mexico, you know, all over the place.
Well, and I know that you have so many different sponsors, of which Ground Floor Theater is sponsoring. And I would be remiss in my duties if I did not talk specifically about Manifesto, which is Rotimi Agbiaka?
Yes, Rotimi.
Rotimi Agbiaka. It's playing on Saturday from 6 to 7. And I just want to read a little bit of this description,
sure.
if I could, because this sounds amazing. What do you do when your Nigerian drag queen goddess instructs you to tell a new story? You summon up your artistic ancestors, James Baldwin, Nina Simone, Grace Jones, Fela Kuti, to help you craft a tale that'll stem the rising tide of fascism. So, and in your program, it's just an amazing picture of him. So that's one that really, really interests me on Saturday.
Yeah, that'll be at 6 o'clock on Saturday at the Vortex.
At the Vortex. And so all the information about where people can go and at what time is found on the Vortex? It's found at the, on your
you
website?
You can find it on the website, which is outsiderfest.org, mm-hmm. Or you could just do at Outsider Fest on any of the social medias. Facebook,
and so when
Twitter.
I come to the festival and I've got a wristband or whatever
a
I
badge.
Have, I can go, a badge, I can go see just about anything or I can see anything.
You can, yeah. You know, a badge will get you access to the whole entire festival, which also includes a conference portion. Which
oh, is tell us about that.
It's actually a really exciting portion of the festival. It actually takes place in my house.
Okay. Oh, I think I read about this.
And it's just a really intimate way for you know, the artists to have kind of an honest exchange about their practice, their thoughts about the world, you know, some of the themes that they're exploring, you know, so some of the topics, for instance, is I think the Friday panel is called Queer and Anti-Colonial. I'm actually going to be moderating a panel on Saturday on media, so there's going to be a lot of media makers on that.
So these kinds of things, it's not a one-time thing, it's several things in your home.
Yeah, we basically have a conference that runs alongside the performances as well, and the conference takes place on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, largely curated by Laura Gutierrez, who also teaches at UT.
Mm-hmm. And Curran Nault is the artistic director.
Yes, he is.
We love Curran.
So do I.
I know you do. He is your husband, is he not?
He is, yes.
Lovely.
He is my husband.
And I just noticed, I'm just looking at that Jess O'Rear is on your board.
Yes, absolutely.
I love Jess. He is my absolute favorite person.
Yes.
He was my co-director on Transom, and he's my favorite person. So what else can you tell folks? What's special, why this year versus other years? Or
sure, I mean, you know, the theme this year, Nasty Fruits, is partially, you know, twofold. One being, you know, kind of a play on fruit being a queer slur, right?
Yep.
The idea of fruit, fruitiness, and also kind of harkens back to this idea of the fruit machine, right? Which was a way to kind of, you know, figure out, you know, if someone was, you know, gay or not. And basically that being, you know, used to dismiss people, say, from the army, right?
Yep.
But the idea of being nasty fruits, right, is kind of also embracing the idea of nastiness, right? Like the nasty woman, the nasty person. And we all know the person in the office uses that word, right?
Yep.
Nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of reclaiming that word also, kind of like the villain or the person who's seen as the degenerate. So I think it's going to be an exciting year. So a lot of the artwork, you know, is kind of, you know, addressing that theme.
Well, great. So it happens this weekend at the Vortex. Where can folks go to get more information? Again, the website?
At outsiderfest.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thanks and have so a great festival.
Thank you.
Okay, that was PJ Raval. He is with Outsider Fest. It's happening this weekend, February 19th through 21st at the Vortex. For more information, outsiderfest.org. I'm We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. What a great conversation we're having with everybody. I've got just a little bit of time left before we need to do this pre-recorded interview that we've got coming up. So I'm going to do Today in Theater History. Y'all ready for this?
Yeah.
Yay. Okay. So way back in, and my printer wasn't working. It wasn't printing color. So I'm going to be guessing on many of the things that this thing says. But in 1935, Stella Adler is in Clifford Odets' Awake and Sing. 1935. At the Belasco Theater, ran for 26 weeks, which is a long time in 1935. 1953, Picnic opened at the Music Box. That's William Ings' tale of a drifter in a small Kansas town. In 1978, now I have arrived in New York by this time, so I actually remember this. In 1978, this is On the 20th Century, which I've never seen On the 20th Century. I know the song, On the 20th Century. It's about a train, I think. It is a Comden and Green piece. It starred Madeline Kahn, John Cullum, Imogene Coca, and somebody named Kevin Klein. It won 5 Tony Awards. Yeah. I saw Kevin Klein do Henry V in the park. It was amazing.
Oh, my God.
1981, the revival of Jacques Brel is Alive and Living in Paris opens at Town Hall. I love that, the music. I love Jacques Brel. Y'all love Jacques Brel? No? You don't love him or you don't know him?
I don't know him.
Oh, and by the way, let me tell you something. Shaking your head doesn't work on the on the radio. 1992, Girl Crazy is revived with Ken Ludwig and Mike Okrent, who I do not know. And it was not called Girl Crazy this time. It was called Crazy for You.
I love that musical.
Yeah, there you go. It was choreographed by Susan Stroman, who everybody that listens to the show know that I worked with her back in the day. 2009, The Story of My Life. It's Neil Batram and Brian Hills, two-actor musical about a lifelong friendship and its sudden ending. It opened on Broadway at the Booth Theater, one of my favorite theaters on Broadway. I had never heard of it. It's with Will Chase and Malcolm Getz. And the reason why I've never heard of it, it closed in 3 days.
Oh.
I know, that's very sad.
That's hard.
And then in 2019, just last year, we had the off-Broadway production of Merrily We Roll Along, which is that huge flop from 1981 that Sondheim did that is beloved by so many. It's never been revived on Broadway, but this off-Broadway was a fiasco theater production, which tends to... condense everything, and they did a whole different way. I believe they did it the right, it goes backwards, and I think they flipped it and did it forwards. I could be wrong. That's me going by memory. And that's it. That's all I'm gonna say about Today in Theater History. So we've done it. So we're gonna take a little break. We are going to listen to, during this break, okay, we heard I'm Gay. Now we're gonna hear from Mean Girls. Those of you on the radio can hear it. Here in the studio, we can't. This is Revenge Party.
Oh, yes. It's a revenge party,
a party that ends with entrails all over. We are back. It is Lisa Sheps, Offstage and On the Air. And now, we teased it at the beginning. I saw Come From Away last night, and I was able to interview last week one of the people that played Kevin T. Not one of the people. He played Kevin T, amongst others. Kevin T was a couple, two men that were coming back from France to Texas. These are he actually lived in Austin at the time during 9/11. And this is the actor that plays his story, which there's a lot of different stories in here. All the actors have a sort of a, and I'm going to use quotes, a main character and others, because they play so many different roles in so many different accents. They get, there's like lots of accents in the show. So let's listen to my interview with Andrew Szymanski, who played Kevin T in Come From Away. We'll be right back. No, we're not going to be back. You're going to listen. We'll be back. Well, hello, everybody. I'm lucky enough to have on the phone with me Andrew Szymanski, who is playing Kevin T, amongst other things, in Broadway Across America's current production of Come From Away. Andrew, how are you? And welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Here's the scary thing. I almost forgot the name of my own show that I've been doing for 10 years.
Yeah, I forget my own name all the time.
So. me too. So you are in Come From Away, which I am so excited to see. And by the time this show airs, I will have seen it. We are recording this a week previous to its airing. Tell folks about Come From Away. It's kind of a 9-12 story.
That is exactly how we like to describe it. It is a true story. About when 9/11 happened, all the planes that were flying across the Atlantic towards North America were diverted to a little town in Newfoundland, Canada, called Gander. And 38 planes with about 7,000 people landed there in a town of about 10,000 people. And this town opened their doors, opened their hearts, opened their refrigerators, opened their pharmacies, opened their entire city to these people that were stranded in Gander for about 5 days. And it's just this incredible true story about love and kindness and generosity and humanity and how people come together during crisis. It's just one of those feel-good stories that you wouldn't believe it unless it was true, and it's absolutely true. And we're just having the best time sharing this story with people around around North America. So yeah. It's a real honor to be a part of it. Yeah.
I like to say that, you know, there's so much vitriol in our society these days and so much, for want of a better word, a hatred going around about people that other than yourself. But yeah. I do believe in, as this true story in Flanders says, it when things happen, people stick together by and large.
I think that's the question. I think a lot of people who watch it, I know when I first saw it, I think the first thing you ask yourself is, would I do the same? You know, yeah. And I think we all hope that we would. But we turn on the news and we see what's going on, and we see people being shut out of this country or that place or not being welcomed here or there. And we have to ask ourselves, you know, what kind of a community do I live in? What kind of a person am I? What kind of a country are we? And I think that's the question that the story asks of us. And I think we all like to believe that we would do the same. But when presented in that moment, I think you can just say, I hope so.
Yeah.
I really hope so. And and these people, you know, they did. And it's funny because they don't think anything of it. I mean, a lot of them, most of them actually are real characters from Newfoundland that we play in the show, came to our opening of our tour in Seattle, Washington.
Wow.
And they are exactly how you think they were. They really say, you know, when you ask them like, oh, like, how do you do it? How did you do this? And they're like, well, you would have done the same. And that's exactly what they think. It's just, that's just how they think. You know, when something happens, this is what you do, and you would have done the same, and this is what we do. And you go like, gosh, I hope I'm like that too. And they are totally authentic people. So it's really beautiful.
Well, that's amazing. Now, your character, Kevin T, is a Texan. Is that not right?
Well, yes, we all play someone that was on a plane and someone that was in that with a Newfoundlander. So, yes, my main character is, yes, Kevin T, who was diverted to Newfoundland. And he was from Texas, Austin, actually. So he's going to have a big contingent of people coming to the show when we're there, which will be really fun. But yeah, he's a super guy. He had a real real spiritual experience when he was there, and he got really connected with his faith again because of the experience. And he has since then set up a foundation called PayItForward911.org, where on 9/11 he has people go out into the world and pay it forward with simple acts of kindness in any way you can possibly imagine. He is a speaker on love and kindness around the country and beyond. It really changed his life.
Sure.
For the better, and so he's a really it's a privilege to kind of play him every night. So
awesome. Yeah. I guess we should tell our listeners, because you know, Come From Away is not like a lot of people not in the business may not be familiar with Come From Away. It's
right.
A joyous musical. Is that, would you describe it as that?
It is. You know, you think of the premise, you know, it's this musical because of the events of 9/11, but it is, it's really funny. And I think that's what's surprising. It's these, you know, it's fish out of water kind of story. I mean, all these people come to this, you know, nowhere place in Canada, and they're just like, where am I? What is going on here? Why are these people being so nice to me? You know, I mean, we are the type who lock our doors every night, and, you know, we're always on the guard. And especially if you're from New York City, you know, you have that kind of like urban, you know, street conscience, and you know, always be on the lookout for this and that. But these people, they just don't have it. And I think that's the funny thing, is like, why do we think that kind of kindness is so strange? You know, we would hope it's the norm, but it's funny to see these people just being welcomed and you know, having just such a unique experience in this unique place.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I just want to, I'm going to switch gears for just a little bit and talk about you. You've got quite a resume of shows that you've worked on, like South Pacific. And I think, were you and Edwin Drood at Studio 54 a few years back?
I was very, very lucky to be part of that show.
Then I have seen you. I was at the first preview.
Oh, well, you know what? I was a replacement.
Okay. Yeah, then I have not seen you. I'm sure it was better with you in it.
Oh, of course. No. I replaced Andy Carl, who was
show. Yeah.
And but yeah, that was a real kick in the pants. I mean, what a cast of people in that show.
Amazing. So, cast of people. Yeah. And you know, some of them are gonna, you know, make something of themselves someday.
We'll see.
And so do you live in New York now when you're not on the road?
I do. Yeah, like most of us in the cast. Yeah
good. Love New York. Lived there for a long time myself, but have been gone quite a bit. And have you been to Austin before?
You know, I have been to Austin. I have a very good college friend who lives there now, and I've gone and visited him there and spent a few days. Everyone, I can't begin to tell you how excited our cast is to get to Austin. I mean, I have already set up all their plans and the places they're going to go, and their friends are coming to Austin. Their significant others are coming to Austin because everyone's just so excited about that great city.
So is there anything that you're looking forward to doing, seeing, or eating while you are here?
You know, I think just connecting with my friend. I'm actually lucky. My 2-year-old is going to join me, and my parents are going to join me in Austin. So, you know, I have a wife and kids, and it's as you can imagine, it's very tough being on the road.
Yes.
But luckily, I'm going to take our son to Austin for the week, and my parents are going to come be there. So it's going to be an awesome week to have them there. So yeah, I'm excited to get there.
Great. Well, wonderful. I know you will love your time here, and we're looking forward to having you back here. And I, for one, cannot wait to see this show. I tried to get tickets when you were when it was in D.C. before it made it into New York. Totally sold out. And then I sat directly behind the producer of Come From Away when I went to see something in New York, and I yelled at him for being sold out when I was in D.C.
Yeah, and that's happening everywhere we go. You know, every city we come to, we sell out, and tickets go like crazy. So it's a show people just want to see once the word is out. It's really exciting to be a part of.
Awesome, and I know our people are going to want to see it. Well, Andrew Szymanski, I told you I was going to kill it.
Hey, you got it right the first time.
Szymanski, thank you so much for being on Offstage and on the Air. And as I said, I'm looking forward to seeing you perform here when you're here at the Bass Concert Hall.
Well, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Andrew Simonsky. He is in Broadway Across America's production of Come From Away, playing at the Bass Concert Hall now through February 23rd. For more information, austin.broadway.com.
Your beers to spare in life,
where there's despair in life, let me bring
home. Where there is darkness, only light.
Where there is darkness, only light.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa Sheps. Well, that's it. You've did it again. So coming up next, if you're listening on the terrestrial radio, is Austin Monitor News. If you're listening on the podcast, and you should, you can get our podcast on iTunes Podcasts, or you can get it through our website, offstageonair.com. Just put your name and email address in. We'll send you the show every Friday, whether you like it or not. Or sorry, every Thursday, whether you like it or not. So we're going to walk away with our last show from our next season. And that is from, you know what? I'm going to tell you. It's from Summer, the Donna Summer musical. It's on the radio. We'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye.
It must have fallen out of a hole in your old brown overcoat. They never said your name, but I knew just who they meant. Whoa, I was so
the curtain
surprised.
Has just come down on Techie the Musical, the story of a hapless young tech support person trying to get studio microphones to work in studios where they do not work. Alas, it's a thankless job. But we've left the stage door. We're outside. We're standing by the dumpsters out here. And joining us here backstage is Jennifer Rose Davis. Welcome back to Backstage.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Michael Rodriguez.
Thank you for having me.
And Maggie Thompson.
Happy to be here.
Both of you guys have not been back here, have you?
No.
No, first time.
Yes, you. Okay, well, we'll start with you, Michael. Who are you? Tell us about yourself. Where'd you grow up? How'd you find theater?
Sure. Wow. So I was originally born in Houston.
Texas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Houston,
sure. Pennsylvania.
Houston,
Texas. Yeah. My dad was working for NASA at the time, and then he went to the private sector and moved to Florida, and grew up there. I got involved in theater really early on, like elementary school, and just kind of kept kind of going back and forth with it. I got really into film and went to school for film production.
Okay.
And I do kind of both. I help produce films with a good friend of mine, and then also do theater. And as far as Austin theater, I've moved here. I've been here for about 5 years now. I've worked with, I did a show at Sam Bass. Was it Inga Binga? Actually, I did two shows there.
Inga Binga.
I know. It's like a weird Kennedy comedy. About a young
comedy?
Kennedy. Yeah, about a young Kennedy and this German woman who apparently it's like somewhat real that there was this German woman who he had a little relationship with, and she
really
may or may not have been a Nazi spy.
Okay.
And there was so it's an interesting sort of bit of history there. I think it's based loosely on the truth, like she existed, but whether he had any relationship with her is up in the air.
You're presuming that our ex-president had affairs.
Kennedy? No.
I don't think he would have done that.
Just doing little shows here and there.
So tell me about so you did theater in elementary school.
Yeah, one show.
Talk about that.
Oh, God. I did one show in elementary school. It's where it all started. I honestly forget the name of the play. It was a
Streetcar Named Desire?
I wish. as much as I can remember, it was a play, it was like based on jazz, it was like a jazz musical about this kid who was obsessed with like Thelonious Monk and all these old jazz artists, and then
definite elementary school material.
I know, right? And I was the kid that was obsessed with the lead, and he gets knocked unconscious, and then he wakes up and meets all of his heroes in his dream, and then they go through all the songs, and yeah, very much
totally.
Elementary school.
So now, were you in Houston at this point?
No, that was in Florida.
Florida. And which part of Florida?
I grew up in Plant City. It's right outside of Tampa.
Oh, I know where Plant City is.
Do you really?
No, I do not.
I was going to say.
Never heard of it. But I do know where Tampa is.
That's usually what you have to say.
Actually, it's on the west coast of Florida, and I prefer the west coast of Florida to the east coast of Florida. I'm just going to say that out loud. So did you do high school in Florida as well?
Yes, correct, yeah.
And where did you go to this so-called film school?
I went to the University of Tampa. It's a little private school. I had scholarships. The only reason I could go there.
UT.
Other UT. I know. Yeah. I have to say that. And we're like, really? No, the University of Tampa.
So you went to film school there. Did you do any theater in the Tampa St. Pete area?
No, not at all. I was fully focused on film. I do some film acting, but it's all small stuff.
And, have you I'm assuming that you've created, acted, or maybe not acted, directed and edited all your own films at the time?
Oh, definitely not all my own. Some of my own, but I was always someone that, and it kind of led me to do acting too, where I don't necessarily have my own baby projects that I want to see carry on to fruition. I prefer to help other people.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of, I think, where I feel myself more comfortable. So whether it's doing theater or like producing, more interested in kind of helping other people.
You working on films at the current time?
Yeah, here and there. We have small little projects here and there. We recently finished a feature film, and then now we're kind of working on the next one and just kind of developing little stuff.
Who's the we? Are you working with a company?
My buddy Dylan Cameron. We have a theater company or a film production company called 30,000 Foot Productions, and it's not, really making money, but we're just making films. So, okay. That's kind of the way
it
goes.
Is there a website? You want to lead people over to your website? We're not under the same rules here as we were earlier.
30,000 Foot Productions. That's the website. We have a Vimeo, YouTube.
Is that a .com?
Correct, yeah, okay. It's a .com.
And it's 30,000 spelled out? I'm going to teach you how to give web addresses.
Yeah, I believe it is, yes.
Okay, well, good. That's cool. And I know nothing about film. Have either of you done film?
A little bit.
A little
bit?
Jennifer, nope. Shaking the head does not work on the radio. Yeah, I know very little. All I do know that I went to a friend of mine back in the heyday of music videos. Mm. She was doing a music video, and I met her on set. And why don't they say the set? Why do they always take why do you meet on set? Why don't you meet on the set?
Oh, I know. There's so many little words.
But anyway, I met her on set, and it was just a matter of the way I distinguish it from theater. When you walk into a theater on tech week or tech night during a tech, there is a feeling and a focus to the room, mm-hmm. and it's at that tech table. And that's where like all the energy emits from. When you walk into a shoot, you can't tell where the center of the room is and what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of sitting around, and then all of a sudden a bustle of activity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then more sitting around.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But anyway, that's
no, and it different challenges as an actor too. I find theater far more enjoyable as an actor and more satisfying just in terms of performing. So it's a weird sort of split to me. Film is ultimately so creative, and I always love it. But having done now a lot more theater, having not done very much in my like early 20s, this is the best. I can't. For me, there's so many more technical things that make film challenging, whereas with theater, you're mostly just challenged by yourself. Can you remember the lines? Can you react? Can you, how well? Because you can't stop. So it's so much more. And, little things. But it's with film, it's just so much little nonsense technical stuff, just stopping in the waiting. You're jumping from different emotional points in the arc.
I couldn't imagine being a performer in film, because that's got to be crazy, especially when exactly that. If you're shooting the ending part, the most emotionally where the stakes are the highest at the beginning of the shoot schedule, that's just crazy, and vice versa, crazy. Mm-hmm. Maggie, you've done film.
A little bit, mostly extra work, but I was recently the lead in, and I say recently, last year I was the lead in a friend's feature. She is at Austin School of Film.
Okay, I've heard of that place.
It's about Ellen Helbert, actually, which is really interesting.
Now, I know who Ellen Helbert is / was, but maybe our listeners don't.
Yeah, so Ellen has a very interesting story. She's a victims' rights advocate. She created a program with the Texas Department of Justice. Because she herself was a victim of some very severe violence. She almost passed away because of it.
Oh, my.
Someone had broken into her home and attacked her. And so I got to film that section of my friend's film and like did the makeup for it, put fake blood on myself, crawled down the stairs in like half of a robe, and then filmed the victim's rights part because Ellen was just she was commended by Ann Richards when Ann Richards was governor through all of her work of sort of bridging the gap of the that comes between forgiveness and acceptance of how can someone commit such a crazy, heinous crime.
Sure.
And she's done some amazing work.
Amazing. Well, Sona, where are you from?
I'm from San Antonio originally.
Texas.
Okay. Texas.
Jennifer, are you from Texas as well?
Well, I was born in Virginia, but I got to Texas as soon as I could.
Okay. So I was just wondering if we had a room full of Texans. Okay, so you're born in, so you grew up in San Antonio?
Grew up in San Antonio for
18
years.
Theater in San Antonio?
Since I was four.
Okay.
At least in some
What did you do
capacity.
When you were 4 years old?
So when I was four, it was like the school programs and like the little musical things that they have you sort of either do sign language to or sing along to,
okay.
and as much as a four-year-old can sing
by
along.
By sign language, are you doing ASL? Is that what you mean by sign language?
Yeah, we learned very basic ASL as children. I'm not well-versed in it at all, but they would have us do motions that were actually signs. I grew up in private school, and so like anytime it was Lord, so we did the symbol for Lord. We did all the different signs for just some basic stuff and continued with school programs until junior high school because then we got into competitions, academic competitions.
Sure.
So I did duet acting.
UIL and junk like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I did duet acting for 3 years. And then in high school, I was in those performances and those competitions as well.
Okay. And are either of you or all three of you musical performers as well?
Did Oklahoma in my freshman year
so
of high school.
Sorry to hear that.
I know. It's okay. It's not the best.
So, although I have to say, I don't know if you know this about me, but I have show tunes Tourette's. And I busted out in Oh, What a Beautiful Morning the other day. I just
oh, that's
stop.
Awesome.
Excellent. Excellent.
So I'm not actually a musical performer, although I am a musician, but I just last summer I did the costumes for Zilker Summer Musical.
Oh, that's right. And
the
it
Little
was
Mermaid.
Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
That must have been a fun costume.
It was wild and crazy.
She
and
won a
super
B.I.
fun.
And Payne for that.
I did.
Yeah,
yeah,
I know.
That's my first
I heard Bearger Speech.
Oh, thank you.
Is that
you.
Your first B.I. and Payne?
Yeah.
I won my first B.I. and Payne this last time, too.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, so
well,
that was very exciting.
That's long overdue.
Well, I'll just keep winning them. And so will you. I did not, and I'm sorry to say, did not get out to the park this summer. As people that listen to the show know that I say every summer I'm going to go, and every summer I do not, because I'm a heat wimp. And speaking of that, and doing the costumes for Little Mermaid out in the park, did you have, I'm assuming, you know, Little Mermaid's got lots of big costumes for some of the actors.
We mostly try to do things that, like, for instance, most of our costumes, we used a unitard base, and then we tried to put, like, big heads on them, you know, so that they looked big,
Ursula,
but they weren't.
Is, like, huge.
Yeah,
right?
So she was huge. She was extraordinarily large. The costume, I mean, not anything else, forgive me.
I was right with you the whole time.
Yeah, but what we did was we constructed these enormous tentacles, and then we stuffed them with styrofoam peanuts so they would be incredibly light. Mm-hmm. So she could actually spin, and the tentacles would float up like they were moving. It was so cool.
Cool. And was that your own design, or did
it was,
you
indeed.
Steal it
well,
from someone?
So it was my design, and then I had an amazing costume technician, Virginia Eagle, who helped me actually figure out how to make it into reality, and she was the one who figured out how to, you know, cut these tentacles and what to stuff them with. And
I have a lot
great.
Of respect for that area of this business. I pride myself in knowing a little bit about every aspect of theater, with the exception of costumes and wardrobe. I just draw blank with that. And so shame on me. But that's cool. And designing something like The Little Mermaid, it's not like you're designing, first of all, a reality, anything based in reality, or like just modern day, modern clothes, which would be one, I'm using air quotes here, easy. I doubt any of them are easy. But when you are doing something like The Little Mermaid or any of these other things, you've got to build more than purchase.
Right. And that was, you know, that's I mean, even when you're working with something like Zilker Summer Musical, which has a budget, you're always still struggling against time deadlines and budget deadlines. And so we had to be very clever about, you know, what can we buy that are existing pieces and how can we add to them to make all this happen within our time frame?
So what do you have coming up on any level, either as producer or as costume designer or any other role that's interesting to you?
I have kind of a crazy schedule. So after this current show that we have running, I'm actually going to do an amazing co-production with my music group that I sing and play mm-hmm. with sometimes called Austin Baroque Orchestra.
Oh, okay.
And they're doing...
Is it rich or is it Baroque?
Well, if it ain't Baroque, don't fix it.
You want dad jokes.
Yeah, there we go. But they're going to do a Baroque opera, and I'm going to help them with costuming and directing and doing Baroque gesture for it.
And are y'all working with any of that? Because there's like opera companies like Lola and other opera companies that are small, like right. not Austin Opera. Are you working in conjunction with one of those companies?
No, actually, Austin Baroque Orchestra is its own thing, and okay. they do several concerts a year, and their music
is
stunning.
When I think of a Baroque Orchestra, I don't think of vocals. I don't think of opera.
Well, they actually have a full choir.
Never mind.
Yeah, so they do some of the big works, and then they do some more intimate works, and they've done concert operas before, but this is their first fully costume staged.
Exciting. Where do folks go to get information about that?
You can go to austinbaroqueorchestra.org.
Okay, Maggie, we switched away from you. You're not off the hot seat.
No, I didn't expect that, Lisa. Okay.
You aren't. So what was your... Do you do musicals? That's how this whole started.
Yeah, so I did Oklahoma. I did one of those small publishing house musicals that you find in random areas of...
Does it have a name?
The theater world. The Dastardly Dr. Devereaux.
Oh.
And I played Nurse Hilda Hatchett. It was an evil, angry German nurse. So I got to sing a big jazz number in the worst fake German accent you've ever heard. purposely so. But I don't think in college we really did too much of that. I did take a course called Opera Scenes and Musical Theater, so mm-hmm. I got to do a scene from Patience, otherwise known as Bunthorne's Bride from Gilbert and Sullivan. And then I also got to do my absolute favorite song from Sweeney Todd, which is A Little Priest. And I got to play
like
Mrs. Lovett, so it was
lovely.
The best.
What was I going to ask? Where did you go to school?
I went to school up just up the road at Concordia University.
Oh, okay.
Up the road, outskirts of town now. It used to be
up the road. Yeah,
UT.
I did not know they had a theater department.
Yeah, it's a very small one. They my senior year there, the last semester, they had just started a minor. But Kelly Gordon has completely transformed that theater department. She's been doing some amazing work. She's actually the granddaughter of Eddie Bracken, famous film actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she pushed us to do a lot of interesting things. They're actually doing their second musical. I've been their photographer for a few years now as an alum. But they're doing Little Shop of Horrors coming March.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
Oh, as a matter of fact, we're listening to a little bit of Little Shop of Horrors right now. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's Suddenly Seymour.
Yes.
Of course, you knew that right away because she's singing Suddenly Seymour.
Right.
Well, great. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us backstage.
Thank you. Oh,
it was a
pleasure.
And
best of luck with the rest of the run.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Tell me the bad times are clean washed away.
Please understand.